And a big aloha to my friend Alex Otey. How are you, Alex?
I am fine, Cindy. Thanks for asking. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. You know, I just love what you do. I've worked with you in the past, and I'm very excited, of course, about your new release, Love Matters Now, the Alex Otey Trio. The thing is, you're so busy helping so many other people out with their work, with your studio and producing and things, that you haven't had time to do much of your own stuff, have you?
Ah, well, that's kind of how it's been over the years. I've done a lot of production work. I've helped a lot of folks get projects done.
You sure
One of
have.
Them is, of course, my wife, who's Miss Amy, and we did 5 albums right there, and then I recorded my father and a few other folks. Leonardo Lassan was a student of my father's, who's a classic pianist. And so finally, this year, is like, I got to get through this because I've been out playing and doing things for a long time and writing incessantly, so it's like, it's about time to finally put this project together.
And you mentioned your dad, and of course your dad was a very famous pianist that worked. He was big in Mexico, wasn't he? That was his roots, was in a classical piano in Mexico, right?
Absolutely. He was born in Mexico, put at the piano at age 2.
Wow.
And by the time he was an early teen, he was pretty well known all through Mexico. He had toured Europe, really by the time he was 7 years old, he had toured Mexico and Europe and wrote a lot of music and became known as a Chopin of Mexico by age 15 and was the youngest professor at the University of Mexico in music
Wow.
when he was 17.
Wow.
So he became very well known, and I didn't know a lot of his background until around the 1990s, and I learned more about kind of what transpired from then on. And so, yes, he became known well in Mexico, but he came to the United States around 1946.
And then you were born in Philadelphia?
That's right. He came to Philadelphia. He went to Curtis in Philadelphia for composition and piano. He was accepted for both, and he studied composition with Juan Carlos Menotti. And,
wow.
Well, he also represented the U.S. Centennial, the Chopin Centennial in Warsaw Pole in 1949. But then by 1959, he was executive director of the music school and going into the 1960s, and so that's when I came into the world.
So you have this heritage, and I kind of wonder why you didn't take up piano, or was it just going to be too heavy with your dad doing all this, you know, because you're a trumpet player.
Well, yeah, I sort of had free lessons since he was the head of a music school, and so I studied trumpet and percussion and music theory as a 7-year-old and, you know, before I was even a teenager, and I didn't really get into playing the piano until I was sort of mid-teen, but I was always around my father and my mother, who was a very good pianist as well, and I dabbled with it. I played with it, and I just kind of, it came really easily in a lot of ways. I just kind of would play things, but I didn't take it seriously until I heard, like, Billy Joel.
Yes,
and
that made more sense.
I thought, hey, I could do that, you know?
Yes, I get it, more than your dad's classical music. But you know, then you've been working hard. When did you meet Amy?
Right, well, as I said, I kind of got into piano. Man, I'd done classical things in my youth, and when I started playing piano, then I was going to go into music full-time, and I kind of diverted from that just because I was more inclined to play trumpet and classical trumpet, and the way the classical trumpet music market looked, it was sort of the orchestra, and you're right, I was not enthralled with doing classical music sort of full-time. I think jazz was sort of in my soul even at that time.
Yeah.
And I got to play with Grover Washington
back in Philadelphia, but then I moved to Dallas, Texas. Yeah.
And that's where I met Amy. And we met over the piano. And we were kind of at a party, and I sat down at the piano, and she started singing. So it was a match right there.
Ah, how wonderful. Well, you were involved, and I guess through her, in a couple of wonderful Grammy projects. Oh, actually, you've been involved in many Grammy projects, but a Grammy-winning projects and 2 Grammy-nominated projects, which is big time. And, you know what it's like being an independent artist. And you know what it's like being a jazz artist. It's one thing, you know, these days, you know, it's kind of hard to get airplay. So I guess that's why, you started a jazz show on your own for a while, right?
Yes. Well, more recently I've been doing a jazz show, WWFM 81.9 HD2, here in Trenton, New Jersey. And I got to know Richie Cole, who's a very big-time jazz player for many years. I played with Buddy Rich Doc Severinsen, Lionel Hampton, Ella Fitzgerald, all the greats. He played with the, you know, Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett, those types. But so I do this jazz show. That was very much, I kind of got pulled into that really with Richie, because he's kind of the local person here in Trenton and knows a lot of, you know, stories and background mm-hmm. over the years. And so we did the show together, and then he headed out to Pittsburgh with some work that he had out there. And so I continued the show, so I still do the Trenton Jazz Show, and I love covering it. And it's nice because I get to learn more of the history, even current history, of a lot of the great jazz artists who are around today, many in the Grammy community. And then, again, have been developing my trio all along and got this first project put together. So it's a nice fit for what I do because I, again, can kind of stay aware of the influences that are out there.
Well, you've been on the road a lot. I mean, I know because you're very involved in a lot of work and helping other people, but also a lot of what the Grammy wonderful community puts on involves going out and meeting and greeting and playing at these different events. So I know that you do hit the road and for work, of course, and for gigs quite often, right?
Yes. Well, we're playing pretty much around the East Coast area, regional, Philadelphia to New York. That's really where I do most of the things. I have been out in L.A. and played out there when the Grammys out there. This year, we have it in New York City, and I'm going to be playing up at B.B. King's with the trio for the soiree that's taking place there. I'll also be at Michael Feinstein's up in New York. And our trio, well, we just last night were playing in Philadelphia at the wonderful Museum of the American Revolution, which is beautiful.
Wow, that must be amazing.
Party.
Wow. So they have some parties there, and then you get to play for the parties?
Yeah, we were, well, sort of dinner music in a way, but it's nice because it was very focused on us. I mean, when we were playing, there were a lot of people who were very liking what we did. And again, we do a lot of the standards. I mean, I do all kinds of things from Cole Porter, Gershwin, up to, you know, Michael Bublé style or Sinatra. So a lot of standards. And then, of course, original tunes, bring them out sometimes in places like that. And tonight, actually, I have a show here in Ewing, New Jersey, at the 1867 Sanctuary, which used to be an old Presbyterian church that they turned into an art center.
Wow.
And so we're playing, it's really to highlight this album, the Love Matters Now album, doing many selections from that tonight.
Now, of course, we do. I mean, Richie Cole's great, but it's interesting in this particular style. In jazz, there's so many different subcultures, and a lot of times the different subcultures don't blend. It's lucky that you can play in all of them, but it's interesting how there's, you know, some groups of jazz think, smooth jazz isn't really jazz, and some people think bebop's not traditional, and some people think, you know what I'm saying, there's different categories that kind of in that subculture. Do you find that it's because of the need for jazz musicians to continue to play and get recognized that's kind of broken down some, and that you can kind of play more gigs now than, or is it still kind of segregated depending on the kind of jazz you play?
Well, it's a very good question. I have, you know, doing the radio show, I explore a lot of different styles. And there are many subgenres of jazz, as you're pointing out. I mean, you have not just the swing and bebop, as Richie Cole does one of the cuts on the album. I wrote a bebop song for that. And as you say, I try to have swing, and I didn't actually put any bossa on this album. I mostly went back to things like Fats Waller and some of the early styles of jazz. I love Gershwin,
mm-hmm.
Which he didn't write jazz per se. He wrote, you know, popular tunes that people play as jazz. But there are many subgenres. There's Afro pop, and there's mm-hmm. Cuban salsa. There's forms of ska, and these days, even across the internet, of course, you can hear things from all over the world. I mean, there's Japanese. They call it J-pop and jazz. There's a mix there, pop jazz. Which has its own sort of style.
I've never heard of that.
Amazing.
Oh,
I
didn't know there was Japanese jazz. J-pop, that's brand new to me. I've never heard that, Alex. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, there's pop, but some of the players there are just tremendous, and they've got their own, again, their own little style that goes with it too. It's not, you know, it's different
uh-huh.
from America. We think of America as being the birthplace of jazz. In a lot of ways, we formulated it. You know, we formalized it. We had a lot of integration within our society of the music influences here, but it really is a worldwide phenomenon. There's so many things. If you go to Africa, if you go to Europe, Russia, if you go to India, Iceland. I mean, they have
Iceland.
Jazz that
okay,
all have their
you
own
you threw me for a loop with Iceland. I know that.
Yeah,
I know that
absolutely.
Europe has always been very, very big in jazz clubs. Probably more than America, right? I mean, more usable, workable, money making clubs there. You'd say.
Yes, they're very appreciative. I know that for sure. And again, the French. I mean, I've known some French jazz players who are just phenomenal. One was a good friend of my father's, actually, going back to that era, Bernard Pfeiffer, and he was an early influence. And he would take classical songs and do them, you know, jazz style. Some people, you know, you take Bach or Chopin or something, play the jazz style. And so, but deep down there are roots that this jazz, maybe it's the folk influence. When I listen to klezmer, if you listen to klezmer, to me, it's like a form of Dixieland.
Interesting.
We think of Dixieland as jazz, but klezmer maybe, but it really, to me, you know, it has that sort of freedom. It has the multi-instrumentation where you have the clarinets and trumpets all kind of playing on top of one another with various scales that, you know, have jazz-like influences. So it's, in some cases, it may not be outright jazz or classified as such, but there are elements of jazz in a lot of different styles of music. And worldwide, these influences are more pronounced. And of course, today, you know, they classify it more as jazz, and yet it's been kind of integrated to their own societies or the own culture of music that they've had. So it's a very abundant form, jazz, and all the subgenres go on and on and on.
Have you played Europe?
I played in a wind ensemble in the UK many years back, and then I sort of went into France and Germany with a sub part of that ensemble and played a few places. I was at the Jazz Club Lionel Hampton, which was a beautiful spot. I don't know if it's still there in Paris.
Uh-huh.
That was beautiful. But I want to go back. I've had a lot of invitations.
Well, you know, so, I mean, a lot of people just fall in love with it and kind of move there because it's like, well, gosh, it's a beautiful place and you can get gigs in clubs, right? And it's interesting. Isn't it terrible how we tend to, unfortunately, not recognize ourselves? And in our own country, we're not really appreciated as much. But if we go to a foreign country, it's like, wow, there's a, you know, a jazz musician who's gotten to play with Grover Washington Jr. and Richie Cole and all these people, and it's all of a sudden you're appreciated, right?
Yeah, it is an interesting phenomenon. The hometown can be kind of, you know, indifferent.
yeah, absolutely. Going back to your roots and doing this one, you know, it's kind of interesting for you because not only do you play, obviously, trumpet and all kinds of styles and piano, but you do production, and you're serious about your production. You worked on one of my pieces, Angel Blessings, Benefiting Hospice. I mean, we were down to the wire, and I have to say, you were amazing. You worked so, so hard mixing and getting everything together, and it was not an easy project because there were 40 tracks. So you have this, your own studio, and at the same time, I know you did, I think, go to Oscar Ate at El Cerrito for some mastering help as well, right?
That's right. And, you know, Oscar was wonderful. El Cerrito, they do a great mastering job. And working on the project with you, Angel Blessings, was really wonderful. It was a great experience to blend so much of that together as a spoken word project with music backgrounds. And so to pull all that together was just a wonderful experience of, again, the music itself. And that's why I think, you know, the engineering, the mixing, technically, I kind of started a studio coming back into it technically. Back in the 90s, I wanted to record my father. I recorded Miss Amy and various things. And I built that sort of the capability of doing that, sort of seeing the trends in the market, if you will, of having to use a studio. I thought, well, let me just build my own and become competent at it. So musically, I certainly like to hear the different flavors of music, even if it's not my own, that I can certainly learn from and experience. And so putting together something like Angel Blessings was just a wonderful experience to hear all those 40 tracks blended together with all the different artists and their ideas and the concepts, both spoken word as well as the music contributions.
It could not have happened without you, and it just happened to be amazingly blessed in some ways, because I was last minute captured that my friend Wayne Dyer, I had to run over with my little Mac computer and record him in his condo, and they were jackhammering and taking asbestos out of his condo, so I had to record him between the blasting of asbestos, and there was so much work to be done because we would have lost those two tracks, not knowing, of course, that he'd die a year later, and so it was precious having some of that. And my stepfather, Dr. Masters, he passed on too. So, you know, some of those things, you know, you don't realize at the time, but you're kind of really, it's amazing when they can be captured and live on. And I know you, in your work and that you do, have that ability with a lot of your friends, because you know how important it is as an indie artist to do the hard work, keep the connections going, you know, try to help people at the same time, try to do your own promotion and throw your hat in the ring as much as you can, right? I mean, because you really have to be a jack of all trades when you're in the position you are, don't you?
Well, very much. We just said engineering, put together the music, write it, arrange it. But then the promotion side is very much, it is a lot of work in promotion. It's not to be taken lightly. It's
right.
A constant battle with the deluge that's out there. We think of the internet having reached to the world, which is wonderful, but it's also a very big ocean of
yes,
all
it
kinds
is.
Of material that's out there. So, you know, if you have something to contribute, because, you know, there's good and bad and everything. And what I mean by that is that there's really refined material, and there's some that's maybe not so refined that's out there. But, you know, and you're contending with that as an artist. You know, you're trying to put your highest refined works out there and hoping that they're getting attention. And it does take a lot of knocking on doors or posting on the web in some capacities to get attention.
And you with Love Matters, and of course, we know it, you know, it was submitted, and you do know that the category is in what category now for the Grammy consideration?
Yes, the Love Matters Now album is in Best Jazz Vocal Album.
Good. Jazz vocal. Now, is that what
officially.
The one, is that what you thought it was going to be in?
Yes, I submitted it in Best Jazz Vocal Album. And just a little bit of background on that quickly. It's as I said, it's earlier forms of jazz. I really have a plan here to do more jazz albums, vocal jazz. It's what I've, again, talk about Billy Joel, but apply it to jazz, and Harry Connick, Randy Newman. I've sort of been compared to this because my songwriting is kind of playful. And I try to make it fun and enjoyable, but it's jazz, and it really is jazz. And so there was a question of, like, how popular might cause it to exclude from jazz, like how popular the form that I'm doing, because it's light jazz, this particular album is, and I plan to get into other subgenres and subsequent albums, but keep a friendliness about it, keep the but also explore other jazz, add more bossa, add some salsa, do some ska type blends, but have it song oriented with a jazz trio format. And yes, I submitted it in jazz, and it stayed there. So that's a good sign. It tells me at least I'm on track, and I've had a lot of good response to it. I was
it's
able
great.
To get a Best Jazz Album in the Academia Awards this summer.
Yay.
And also placed in the Global Music, which was exciting.
And people can go to I have to wind it up, but people can go to alexotey.com, and there's links
right.
there, and they can get a chance to hear it on SoundCloud. And I know you got a gig to play tonight, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time on the run to call in. And I wish you the
Cindy,
best
thank
of
you so
luck.
Much.
Wish you the best of luck on your project.
Very much appreciated. Thank you, and best of wishes to all of Hawaii. I hope to get out there. Actually, I've had a couple of invitations to go play
on Maui.
Come.
So. You should come. I have a house. You can stay anytime.
Waikiki, too.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I want to get out there. It sounds wonderful.
All right. You take care and have a good night. Aloha.
Thanks so much. Aloha, everybody. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.